Well, welcome to Course in Miracles, everybody.
Thank you.
You know what we have to do tonight is the section we're reading is called The Function of Reason. And it really does mean reason. You know, just literally what makes sense with mind. You know what that's what we're talking with reason. Reason versus basically insanity. Basically reason versus unreasonable or perfectly chaotic or not true, not reliable, unreasonable. And so thank goodness your mind, what you actually exist as, is an extension of the only power that there is. This power is when you attach to it, when you awaken to your mind, your right mind, that it's perfectly consistent. Therefore, it's perfectly reasonable. Why? How can you be so sure? It's because your right mind is an extension of what is. Of what is in truth. You know, we say God is, and then we cease to speak. Very simple logic, right? What else can you say other than the absolute recognition? It's very reasonable. It's kind of sobering too, isn't it? When you say, the Course says it, we say God is, and then we cease to speak. It doesn't mean we cease to think. It doesn't mean we cease to be. We cease to make distinctions. Speaking is words, labels, making distinctions. We say God is, and then we cease to speak, not cease to be, not even cease to create. It's a very nice, simple, reasonable thought that maybe is an introduction to what we have to talk about tonight. What we're talking about tonight is... Oh, Luann, what do you got?
And we seek to put words into whatever?
Say that again?
Cease to speak. When I'm thinking, I'm getting words in my head. Does that mean we're stopping doing that?
Yes, absolutely. If you want to go to the absolute, it's a spiritual phrase. It's a spiritual term. Then you go away from the relative. That's the two sides of the coin. Absolute and relative. Relative is where you make distinctions and comparisons and differences, which is no sin. In fact, it's a blast. The relative is a blast. No problem. Life, living, is extremely relative. And it's beautiful. And it's fun. No problem. Living is not absolute. In fact, it's quite fragile, isn't it? Quite conditional. And there's no guarantee how much living is going to happen. In fact, there is a guarantee that it's going to be limited, isn't it? That's part of the whole movement thing of living in itself, is that it comes and goes. And to the ego, that's what makes it precious. Oh, that darn ego. So upside down. Doesn't mean it isn't fun. But it's not absolute. Absolute has qualities of God. Eternal, infinite all-powerful is not strong enough to describe what will is. It is will. The ego does not deal in absolutes. It's not part of the game that we're in this relative world. And so, no guarantees. You get half measures and all sorts of substitutes for true peace of mind, for true certainty. We say God is, and then we simply cease to speak. Don't cease to be, but it's entering into the absolute. You see? Any description of God goes back into the discrete, into speaking. It's like any example of living cuts life short, doesn't it? It's just like that. So simple that way. But, you know, it's a spiritual versus material conversation right there. That's the coin that has two sides. That's your spiritual, you know, your material existence, your personal existence versus your non-personal existence. Did you know you had a non-personal existence? You've all lived glimpses of it all through your life. Everybody has, even those who are not on a spiritual path. So, Dari, what do you got?
Well, I just feel like being a devil's advocate for it.
Well, great. Well, that's fresh and new.
When you say cease to speak,
yeah,
there's what bothers me about that is that thoughts arise, and thoughts arise on a rather continuous basis, and so there seems to be a pitfall in thinking of that sentence. Because it's an unattainable one for someone in the human condition.
Sure.
It's not like your thoughts don't arise. So instead of cease to speak, I would rather have it be, I know that's what it actually says, but I would rather have it be cease to be attached to any of the judgments arising in the, you know what I'm saying?
Sure. I like where you're going. I like what you're talking about.
You know, it took, I don't know, me 5 years or something meditating to find the space between thoughts.
Yeah.
And then it was almost infinite, but it was like thought, whoops, thought, what thought? You mean there's a space between? And, So I could be sitting here saying, oh my God, I can't do that. I can't do that. I can't do that. I must be not doing it well enough. And that's not the place to be. And so I just wanted, it's like it's going to come. And then it doesn't seem to me.
I like what you're talking about because it is what the kind of work we have to do, which you would to identify the blocks. The blocks to the awareness that comes when you see between thoughts.
And also not to be attached to the fact you've made a judgment, just to be feel good that you saw that you made a judgment. Here's something, you know.
Yeah, that's all healthy. That's all good. That's all the work is to undo your stinking thinking. And then to recognize that thinking is like breathing. If you stop thinking, you stop existing. And if you stop breathing, you stop existing. I have no problem with what she said. However, what's happening in a spiritual awakening is out of time. There isn't even time to form a thought, what I'm talking about. It's that instant when the absolute occurs to you. It's an instant. How long is an instant? It's not a measure of time. It's not a measure of time. If you can have thoughts that pop up, you're simply back in time. That's all. It's not a matter of duration I'm talking about. That's why I say everybody here has experienced the holy instant. Everybody here has experienced even the absolute. You probably were unaware of it. Unless you're doing your spiritual work, as Sudari was talking about. She's done a lot of work to open her eye to these kind of brief, infinite moments. You know that infinite means not a long time. Infinite means there is no time. This is the kind of opening, relieving even concept that opens your third eye. When you recognize that the spiritual awakening is not a matter of time. It is a matter of the absolute. It's not a relative matter. This is also why, you know, your spiritual awakening, it's not a progressive thing. You can sure spend a lot of time working on it. You can sure have what you say are glimpses and higher understanding and all that sort of thing. But there does come a moment when your eye opens and there's no closing it. There's no going back. It's not something that you can even necessarily say exactly when it happened. There's this one spiritual guy, and he recognized through all of his work that there are people who get their awakening comes like jumping in a pool. Suddenly, you're surrounded by this awareness, and you get out drenched in your awareness. And then there's other people who wander through a mist and they don't know when they got wet, but after wandering long enough, they're soaked. They can't say what event did it. In both those cases, there's still an instant when the awareness comes of the absolute. The absolute, it is a truly a spiritual term, because anything material is based on the relative, a measure, a place, a time, something that you would speak about. And the more you spoke about it, the more you would understand it. But we say God is, and we cease to speak. And just for a brief moment, there is understanding. It's an instant, folks. It's not a duration. That's why we call it a holy instant, not a holy minute, not a holy 4.5 days. It's completely unnecessary. The duration is completely unnecessary and confusing. But the certainty is absolutely necessary. You know, before we jump into tonight's paragraph, I want to read you this short little dialogue. It's kind of cute. I just found this in this little spiritual magazine. This is as much entertainment as anything else, but yeah. Hello, God? Hello. I'm falling apart. Can you put me back together?
I'd rather not.
Why?
Because you are not a puzzle.
What about all the pieces of my life that fall to the ground?
Leave them there a little while. They fell for a reason. Let them be there for a while, and then decide if you need to get any of those pieces back.
You don't understand. I'm breaking apart.
No, you don't understand. You're transcending, evolving. What you feel are growing pains. You're getting rid of the things and the people in your life that are holding you back. The pieces are not falling down. The pieces are putting in place. Relax. Take a deep breath. And let those things you no longer need fall down. Stop clinging to pieces that are no longer for you. Let them fall. Let them go.
Once I start doing that, what will I have left?
Only the best pieces of you.
I'm afraid to change.
I keep telling you, you're not changing. You're becoming.
Becoming who?
Becoming who I created you to be. A being of light, love, charity, hope, courage, joy, mercy, grace, and compassion. I made you for so much more than those shallow pieces you decided to adorn yourself with and that you cling to with so much greed and fear. Let those things fall off you. I love you. Don't change. Become. Don't change. Become. Become who I want you to be, who I created. I'm going to keep telling you this until you remember.
Well, there goes another piece.
Yes, let it be like this.
So, I'm not broken?
No. But you're breaking the darkness.
Like dawn.
It's a new day. Become. Become who you really are.
Kind of sweet, huh? Anonymous. Hey, Ross, what do you got?
Well, the one thing I picked up on that would disagree with the Course is he said, drop the people that are holding you back. And the Course would totally disagree with that and say, no. You have to go to heaven with your brother. Other than that, nailed it.
Yeah, indeed. And you would go to heaven with your brother, but it would be not with your brother's ego. And so if you're fixated on your brother's ego, you should drop that right away. You don't have to fix that. If you think your mission is to fix your brother's ego so that you can go hand in hand in some physical form to the heaven, you're never going to go.
That's true. That's another spin on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But in your mind, you have to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. You have to see that your brother is always right, but his ego is always wrong.
Right.
It would take a miracle to see your brother without his ego, but that's what we're doing. Yeah. Good, Ross. You bet. You know, that is a metaphysical teaching point of A Course in Miracles, what Ross brought up. And it's really good because it really makes you think. Because, you know, there's so much evidence for rotten things that people do that you would just not attribute to God. And yet, A Course says that you can't escape what you believe is true. Because of what you are, because of how mind works, you can't escape what you believe is true. That's why it says that you need to work with your brother. That's why it says you have to save the world. What a crazy phrase, right? Save the world, when in lesson 132, that says there is no world, and yet 100 times Literally, I think it's over 100 times. The Course refers to saving the world. But it's at a different level. When it has that discussion, it's not save the whales, the mountains, make sure there's no oil spills. That's not saving the world the Course is talking about. It's saving the world, saving your brother, saving your ideas from being harmful, leaving only the beautiful thoughts, applying correction to the mistake. That's saving the world. You know, just because Ross brought it up, and I think we can work it into tonight, let's look at my favorite brother paragraph before we kick in. Turn to text page 142. This is sort of elucidating and repeating a bit that the idea of your another or your brother or other beings having power over you. This is one of the ways that you can teach and learn, is to grapple with what seems so obviously to be another. So look at 142, paragraph 4. And you there, Ross? You want to read? Maybe he's.
Yep.
Oh, he is. Yeah. Give us. Okay. Wait a minute. So what we're doing tonight, I'm actually going to have you start with paragraph 3. And then we'll launch. And then why don't you do 3 and 4, Ross?
The will of the Father and of the Son are one by their extension. Their extension is the result of their oneness, holding their unity together by extending their joint will. This is perfect creation by the perfectly created in union with the perfect Creator. The Father must give fatherhood to his Son because his own fatherhood must be extended outward. You who belong in God have the holy function of extending his fatherhood by placing no limits upon it.
Okay, now that's a tricky little bit of phrasing right there. I just want you to reread that one sentence before you continue.
You who belong in God have the holy function of extending his fatherhood by placing no limits upon it. Let the Holy Spirit teach you how to do this, for you can know what it means only of God himself.
Wow, do you see the radical circle there? Only by accepting your inheritance can you even know God at all. Can you fulfill your function even? But that's what we have in the workbook, you know. It's pretty grand lessons about your inheritance. Okay, Ross, go ahead. Give us 4.
What I was listening to today was the passage where it says, if a brother asks you to do a foolish thing, do it. But not if it's going to hurt you or him, but just do it and then I'll extrapolate here and say that he believes his salvation depends on you doing that thing. So if you believe that your salvation depends on not doing it, that's the only reason why you would not do it. So go ahead and do the foolish thing. And then that gets back to what we were talking about your brother's ego is always wrong. So what? Do his foolish thing anyway, because he believes his salvation depends on that foolish thing.
Yeah, you know, that's referred to in the Bible, right? Turn the other cheek.
Well, that can be misinterpreted.
And in the other places referred to the Bible is walk the second mile.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's more clear.
Your brother has you carry a pack a mile. Take it a second mile so that you know that you disregard the ideas of burden. Helping your brother is not a burden. Nothing actually in this world is a real burden. But you won't know unless you try, unless you actually experience in freedom carrying the pack a second mile.
But I like the way that what I read in the Course puts it is that he believes his salvation depends on that foolish thing.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you think your salvation depends on not doing it,
right?
You might as well do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've followed that advice before.
Nice. Nice.
It's been like, okay, I will do this foolish thing.
Yes.
So I know it's foolish.
Yeah, there's a Sufi saying that I like that's really pithy on the same topic. And it says, take the bitter pill just so that you know that it's not more bitter than it is. Right? Don't we imagine things are so bad that aren't? Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I could give you some.
What do you got, Don?
Well, this is great. If I'm understanding it correctly. So I don't remember the last time I reported on what my daughter had to say to me. About a month ago, she wrote me and basically said she wanted nothing to do with me until I reflected upon how I had damaged our family when she was a kid.
Guilt trip.
And I've really struggled with how to respond to this. I really have. I mean, I can reflect back and say, yeah, geez, that guy, you know, really misbehaved and made it hard on everybody.
Uh-huh.
A lot of suffering and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what good would it do her? How truthful would it be to claim that I did that?
Okay, so now this is where you want to be a normal human being to relate to your loved ones. You must have your Holy Spirit counsel you so that you don't believe this wrapped story that anybody can be hurt by you in the ways that matter. Neither can they hurt you in the ways that matter, in truth. Now, you are living on the relative world of father and daughter, and time and money and respect and this sort of thing.
Birth and death.
Birth and death and all the flavors and travails in between. That's right. That's normal. That's where you live with your body. And if your daughter is focused on being a body and you are focused on being a father in a body, which you are, by the way, because, you know, you're still keeping your daughter special. It's not a sin, but we do want to have the Holy Spirit walk us through this one. So good. I'm so glad that you are sensitive to it. I'm encouraging you not to deny the normal behavior of a caring father, especially one who recognizes, yeah, some of that stuff I did was pretty crappy. I wish I didn't do it, and I certainly wouldn't do it today. If that's true, as far as at the level of being Don, among Don's children, I have no problem voicing that. What I want you to do, though, is not take on guilt because of it. For you, for your true self. Because you're waking up now to your spiritual identity, Don. And the spiritual identity is very, very compassionate. However, it is carefree. It's not careless. That would be unskillful. But the awakened spiritual mind is carefree.
Okay.
It's not careless, though. So watch that. Watch that razor's edge.
Okay. Yeah, the word that came up for me is inconsequential. The things that I've done in the past are inconsequential. It's not that they don't matter. It's that in the spiritual correctness, they're inconsequential because I'm still a child of God, perfect, you know, as God created me, on and on.
Forever.
And also, I know in the Course it says the Holy Spirit will basically undo the consequences.
Yes.
And that was part of my struggle, too. It's like, I mean, it was really a mind fuck for me.
Yes.
To try to figure out how to be truly helpful.
Good, good, good. Yeah, good, Don, that you're walking the path as a good student. Okay. You're asking the appropriate personal questions, and you're challenging the book to show you the light side and the dark side. In other words, oneness versus separation. In other words, your holy self versus your separated self. And Don, the body, Don, the father, definitely has a part to play in the separated self. And you can definitely do things wrong. Yeah. They'll even put you in jail for it. Your daughter could hit you for saying the wrong thing at just the right time. It's very personal for her. Be compassionate. You can be very compassionate. In fact, the more you awaken, the more open-minded you get, the more compassionate you get. That's why Buddhism and A Course in Miracles really interlace. You become, as you become more trusting and more tolerant and more honest, you start to get more compassionate because you get more open-minded. And you seek only for love. In whatever form it acts, it's all love, by the way. You learn this. It's all love. There isn't some power that's not love, which can be known by the right mind, which is what you awaken to. Then you can see Christ's face everywhere. Even in the father that said the horrible things 10 years ago, that's for you to see. Do not try to defend yourself and show it to her. You would say, apologize with the most sincere present moment that you can muster, and she will feel that. Now that's a loving communication. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
You've just given me that communication, daughter to father, and I respond, that's a choice that I would make differently now. I regret having done that in the past. I wouldn't do it that way any longer because I've grown and I love you.
I'm not that person.
I'm not that person any longer. So, yeah. And that goes a long ways towards undoing the guilt trip with the others. Because, first of all, they probably won't bother doing it again unless it's just a test to see whether it absolutely did lose its potency over you. As a method of control. That's what it goes.
What, I lost your last 10 words. What?
That it must have been. What a guilt trip is a way of controlling people's behavior. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to control you by making you feel guilty, and you're going to do this way, and that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And so if I just say, you're right, that was a decision that I wouldn't make the same way any longer because I love you. And I'm not the same person anymore as you added on.
Yeah.
And what that does is it disempowers the other from doing that any longer.
Right. It
probably won't bother because they did it and holy moly, it doesn't work anymore.
Yep. Derails the whole
thing. Right. In fact, this person just taught me by modeling something different than what they would have once done, which is go, oh, I'm so sorry, I'll throw myself off a cliff immediately. That's
very
not
good.
That's very not good. Skillful, which is the word you use that I love when I coach. I look around for skillful responses.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Thank
what
you.
What do I want to accomplish?
Sundari, what do you got?
Well, In that situation, I would not so much be looking at my own guilt or what I did or da-da-da-da-da-da like that, but I would hear what's underlying what she's saying, which to me is I'm hearing her say, I want to be loved. I want to be seen. I want to be heard. I want to let my feelings be allowed. and I want to let my feelings be heard. And so, I'd say you're loved, you matter, and how you feel is very important to me. And if you ever feel open to letting me hear how things were for you, I would really love to know that. I would really love to know better my own behavior, but also to understand how it was for you.
Uh-huh.
And so I'd shift what matters to the person, because it's really their cry for love.
I understand that.
And I'd almost, it was so powerful. In one group I was in where we did 6 months of everyone clearing with everyone.
Yeah.
Hour of just letting a person talk for an hour without being interrupted, without any rationalization, just to be heard. And what I found with person after person for myself is just my allowing, someone allowing me with a flame between us representing Holy Spirit to just speak my truth for an hour, let me clear with anybody. And I could be 100% clear just by allowing myself my own feelings and to express them.
Thank you, Sundari.
Thank you, Sundari.
Just don't forget to be normal. You know, because the ego will try to defend itself in very subtle ways.
Yeah, I'm tuned into that consideration. There's no doubt about it.
Good. Your Holy Spirit, though, you take a minute before you have the discussion and do page 28. I'm here only to be truly helpful. And that'll just really orient you and get you in the right direction.
Okay.
Page 28, italics. I'm here to talk to my daughter only to be truly helpful. And I'm here talking to my daughter to represent in this conversation him who sent me. That's the Christ in you. Sends you forward to connect in love. He's what sent you to talk to your daughter, not your ego, not competition, none of that. Him who sent me. And since I'm representing him who sent me, I don't have to worry about what to say or what to do. Forget the agenda. Forget anything memorized. Show up. Open-hearted. Why? Because he who sent me will direct me. You're open to your Holy Spirit in this conversation. I'm content to be wherever he wishes, knowing he goes there with me. And then the deeper lesson.
Yeah, I guess that I have to say I don't trust myself to communicate based on where to say truthfully, but I mean, I'd be being honest. I don't know how.
That's why I say be normal. Here's how it sounds. What's your daughter's name?
Katya.
Katya, I would like to apologize. You apologize? Are you kidding me? Yeah, I really mean it. I'm not even sure how to do it, how what to say, but I want you to know I'm a different person now. And you could say all the normal things you would say to make a sincere apology. The point for A Course in Miracles is that you don't take on guilt or give guilt for it. Just be normal. It's a chance to have a loving communication that Sundari was talking about. But be normal. Have the Holy Spirit coach you ahead of time so that you're not attacking or defending. See, that's the darn thing the ego will do. Jacqueline, you had your hand up.
Can I just say, you know, I hadn't communicated it now. The way she proposes it, which is through an email, by the way, and I've invited a conversation. I invited to listen. I don't know. So she wants me to reflect on it, and it seems as if she doesn't want to have a verbal conversation with me. She wants me to write something on an email.
You know, you should meet her on whatever ground she's willing to meet you on.
Well, that's
right. If you can, if you can, just ask the Holy Spirit to come with you, make it a loving communication from your heart, and be normal. You know, it's not about you. It is about her, all this talking, and it's in her head. She's doing something to herself.
I know.
But, you know, you're her father, and you have a unique position to play now for both of you.
Yeah.
And she's calling for love, as Sundari was saying. You can bring the love. Oh, my God. She's open arm asking you to bring the love back, and you can do exactly that. Reflect. Go for it.
Okay.
Don't bring on the guilt.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It could be a nice joining for you and your daughter. Could do a lot of healing. Yeah. Don't forget to be normal.
Okay.
Sound normal. Say the normal words. Right out of a Hollywood script, Don.
Okay.
But your Holy Spirit's going to translate that for you. For her, she'll do whatever she would have done anyway, but you can make it beautiful.
Okay, thank you.
Good. Jacqueline, what do you got?
Well, I was just kind of tuning in about, you know, when I've had experience of somebody, you know, being critical of me or having a hard time with something I've done or said. But I was thinking about it as a Course in Miracles student, as I come to really have a sense of my innocence and everyone else's innocence. So, you know, I don't have that totally clearly. I mean, it's a work in progress, but it's there more than it was before. And then also a sense of, oh, guilt. Guilt drives me so much. And when that starts to soften some, of Course in Miracles, when someone has an issue with me, it's more natural to go, oh, you know, be able to hear it and to be able to respond in not such a defensive way. It just all gets softened. And I was just thinking of how valuable that is.
How valuable that is. And now the world that was a place of division is a place of uniting because you've softened it. And even though somebody has a real problem with you, now you can use that problem for joining. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Good. Good.
And being able to, you know, before the defenses are so big, couldn't even honestly look at my own behavior or how I might have hurt that. You know, I might have known that I did, but not even be able to, but more, you know, in a more comfortable way, say, well, yeah, you know.
Right. It's so different now, right? Before you may have been forced to defend yourself first and then try to listen to them. Well, you're so wrong about, I didn't even say that. And if I did, I didn't mean it. And let me tell you what you should have heard. You know, think of all I've done for you. All that comes out first so you can feel better about yourself. And then you want to have, give them a shoulder to cry on after you've slapped them around. That's how it used to be. But not now. It's softer now. It's open-hearted and open-minded now. It's less defensive now. Beautiful. Well said, Jacqueline. Good, good. What do you got, Tim?
Just that if you ask somebody who has a backload of hurt, perceived hurt, and you say, tell me all about it, I assume they came to you, and the timing is theirs. You didn't say out of the blue to them, please tell me every way that I've possibly hurt you. The sobriety. It's not a 12-step program where you're looking up everybody that you think you might have ever hurt and ask them for their forgiveness. They're coming to you, and so it may not be convenient for you to spend the next hour or two listening to them share all their perceived hurts about your past, especially if you go back like a father and daughter. So it's not A Course in Miracles to allow them to pick the time in which you will spend a full hour or more saying nothing or very little in response to a long diatribe of perceived hurts. So just have that in your head before you utter that word. The second is Don is noticing that she came to him in an email. Emails are safer than face-to-face conversations for dangerous topics. She believes you can hurt her. You know this because she's telling you, you've heard her. So she believes that that's her reality for her. And like you said earlier, Andrew, what you believe is, you know, what it is for you. And so the email is safer. Even a phone call is safer than a face-to-face confrontation over material that's been accumulating for half a lifetime or longer. And so people tend to come to us in those alternate. You get a text. Easier still. I'm breaking up with you. Or nothing. What do they call that now? Ghosting, right? That's the current dating thing. You know, tons of texts and emails and phone calls and then nothing. You know, so those are safety mechanisms, the emails and the phone calls and the anything but a face-to-face. And then what you'll discover is that if that goes well, then the face-to-face comes next. They dare to step, you know, first the toe in the water and then they step into the pool. Like that. Just my two cents. Your mileage may differ.
What do you got, Luann?
From a psychologist's point of view, an email is a perfect place because she's expecting you to either cave or come back at her. And you, an email gives you time to say whatever she said. You can look at it and find the place in you where you do what Andrew was saying to do, which is just be loving and honest in a short little couple of sentences, because you don't want to go back after her. And when someone's telling you that to your face, it's really hard not to let your negative feelings come up and explode in front of you. So I just think an email, maybe she was trying to protect herself, but it's also a good way for you to protect yourself too from doing something you don't really want to do.
Yeah, edit yourself. Yeah. That's good.
I don't really want to say, nowhere in this have I felt like I wanted to defend myself.
Good.
Or to discredit her hurt or anything. I really just was, and I did, after a while I did write a letter. I didn't send it. I wrote it and it just, I was just kind of, I brought a lot of guilt into it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Good catch.
And I also didn't know, you know, should I be like specific about all the things I can remember, you know, that I might, that could have hurt her. And so,
you know, you start out, Dawn, and start out not with the specifics, unless there's some really, you know, obvious ones that she mentions every time. Go ahead and mention those, but get present to your present state of mind and how you have had some awakenings around being a callous, closed-minded, selfish person. You've become more aware, and you really have. And then you can continue to have her say, well, what about when you said this to me? And you say, wow, I don't even remember saying that. That's what happens a lot of times, is that she remembers something you didn't even,
She actually did. See, in a way, her communication just boggles my mind, because we have had, not too recently, but a couple of years ago, we had a conversation on the phone. She was really limiting how I could relate to her. And she brought up something that happened, you know, a sharing custody kind of thing, that the way I responded, which I guess to her felt like I wouldn't talk to her. I didn't remember.
Yeah.
But when she brought it up, I said, you know, I apologized, and I felt the pain she must have felt at the time. And I didn't, and I just acknowledged it. I didn't.
Yeah. See, the key, Dawn, is that you're really only having a relationship with your daughter today, the now. And if you are truly desirous of having a loving, holy relationship with her, the past doesn't matter. No matter what thing she claims you may have done, it's where you are today. The fact that she's reaching out to you says you haven't done anything so egregious that she's trying to get the police to catch you.
Oh, yeah. No.
So I think there's a lot of hope here. I think your daughter is reaching out for you.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Good.
Thank you for giving me all this time, everybody. I appreciate it.
You bet. Well, you know, it's all the part of the work we have to do to have a Holy Spirit orient us toward the difficult conversations in our lives. Because there is much, much, much in the way of reflecting love here. This is a huge opportunity. It's a huge part of what's really going on, that your ego is co-opted. But so let's have, Deborah, what do you got?
Just thinking about, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was just thinking about that in the book, that phrase of setting the goal before you start writing. And sometimes when I write, I start out really pretty low-level ego stuff, you know, and then I just keep rewriting it until I'm really connecting with the love. I've done that a few times lately, and it's just so cathartic for me. It really puts me in touch with my best, with spirit, and that I can actually reach that other person in that place too. It's just this like
layer. And you could edit your ego out.
Yes.
Very nice opportunity.
Okay.
Good. Good. You know what? After you've done that writing and you've edited your ego out and she managed to get some loving phrases from her dad, her attack may go down quite a bit. And your communications may soften. And your hearts will fill, and then you can join and you can then speak normally, because neither you will be trying to attack or defend at some point, someday.
Okay.
Good, good. Thank you, Deborah. Really good comment.
Thank you, Deborah.
Very worthwhile.
Yeah.
Good, good, good. Okay, so we have Ross finished reading the magical paragraph 4. You can start over, Ross, on 4.
Unmuting. 4:142. When you meet anyone, remember it is a holy encounter. As you see him, you will see yourself. As you treat him, you will treat yourself. As you think of him, you will think of yourself. Never forget this, for in him you will find yourself or lose yourself. Whenever two sons of God meet, they are given another chance at salvation. Do not leave anyone without giving salvation to him and receiving it yourself. For I am always there with you in remembrance of you.
For I am always there. I am always there with you in remembrance of you. So I am content to be wherever he wishes, knowing he goes there with me. Yeah, there's a bunch being taught here. Look at text page 384. Text page 384, paragraph 7. For a few more words on this. And we're about to read paragraph 7 in isolation, but this is a beautiful section called The Happy Dream. That's the section that we're going to be reading from in chapter 18, but we're just zooming in on the last paragraph because, you know, what we're just picking up a beautiful point that Ross brought up. Hold your finger on 142, though, because we're going to come back there as an introduction to what we're studying tonight. So now you're on 384, paragraph 7, and Michaeline, I got your mute. Would you read that for us?
I'm lost.
Sure.
Okay.
Don, you're in the text, the front of the book, on page 384.
Oh, okay, got it. Got it.
Whoever is saner at the time the threat is perceived should remember how deep is his indebtedness to the other and how much gratitude is due him, and be glad he can pay his debt by bringing happiness to both.
Boy, isn't that great for Don and his daughter?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, please continue.
Let him remember this and say, I desire this holy instant for myself that I may share it with my brother whom I love. By the way, I say that I use this paragraph.
Nice.
It's so weird. I'm back and I'm saying this paragraph. I'll start again. I desire this holy instant for myself that I may share it with my brother whom I love. It is not possible that I can have it without him or he without me. Yet it is wholly possible for us to share it now. And so I choose this instant as the one to offer to the Holy Spirit that his blessing may descend on us and keep us both in peace.
Beautiful. Thank you. Well done. There's one more.
I have read page 419 on the top of that. I don't know that.
Oh, well, yeah, 419 is one of our toolbox items. If it really hits the fan, if you're really in trouble, you need page 419. I don't think we're that desperate tonight, Michaeline, but thank you. Sundari, what do you got?
Well, this paragraph is so sweet. It's this week my first grandchild was born.
Oh, congratulations.
I've just spent a week holding her, this little 5.5-pound. And the most amazing thing is being with a being who as yet carries not one judgment. The innocence of that, it's like she grants me perfect love and with no judgment. And it's so contagious. And it's so, it's automatically a blending with that energy and the power of it. And just to be so aware, like she came out with her eyes wide open, just to, and in a way, that's what all this is talking about. It's like the degree to which we can just be in that way that this little grandchild is just here.
That little grandchild and your own daughter, you know, and your son and me and Michaeline and Luann. Isn't that infant still there?
Yes.
Exactly. And it's just like falling into creation and the utter wonder of it. But I was truthfully struck with just the being, a little child's beingness, perfect beingness, and instantly we merge to some degree with that. It's like my little brother, sister gives me is immediately felt. And somehow in this situation.
Just remember that when she turned 16 and after she'd seen a whole bunch of movies and tried drugs and, you know, just remember that what you're saying now, because it would apply then too.
No, but it does. It
right?
does.
Yeah.
You know, I've walked through that, Andrew.
Yeah, you have. I know you have.
No, and, you know, I mean, I've walked through that and chosen that path in the worst of it. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned is that at that worst point with the child, with the when everything looks the darkest, the way that I honor the situation is not to fall into my fear, but to see the best in them, because that's the only way they can see it in themselves. And, I was in a situation of a doctor saying, this person's dying for 80 days. And I could either fall into that and believe what the medical profession was telling me, or I could see a good life and for that person. And I chose to just hang on to that for dear
life. And that's exactly what you live that day.
Hang on to that for dear life, you know, just because it made me happier.
Bingo. And it's contagious. And it's healing. And it's light.
It was the only way, I think, that they were able to see the light for themselves, if it's reflected back. It's like, no matter how ugly this looks now, I am going to choose to see that light because that makes me happier this moment to walk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good lesson. Turn to page 449, 449 in your text, paragraph 5. And Deborah, when you get there, page 449, I got your mute. Page 449, paragraph 5. Would you read paragraph 5 for us?
The world you see is but the idle witness that you were right.
Wow. There's the world. Okay.
This witness is insane. You trained it in its testimony, and as it gave it back to you, you listened and convinced yourself that what it saw was true. You did this to yourself. See only this, and you will also see how circular the reasoning on which your, quote, seeing rests. This was not given you. This was your gift to you and your brother. Be willing then to have it taken from him and be replaced with truth. And as you look upon the change in him, it will be given you to see it in yourself.
Beautiful. Thank you, Deborah. Tidy circle. Tidy circle. As you see it, then it is. And you'll have to either dream or receive the truth. Okay. Okay, I think we can jump back to tonight's reading. All right, yeah, let's see what time it is. Okay, yeah, let's drop. You can drop page 142. Let's get ourselves onto page 457.
Andrew, I can hear everybody, but I'm not seeing everybody.
Okay, you only see whoever's speaking, is that right? Like you see me now, your whole screen?
Nope, I don't see anybody. I'm back at the page where if I hit the URL, I would get you to the meeting.
Are you on a laptop, a Mac, a PC, or a phone?
A Mac. I'm seeing the little pumpkin with the pumpkin pie.
Okay, look at the bottom of your Mac. Use your mouse to go to the bottom of the Mac and hover over the Zoom icon and press that.
The Zoom icon at the bottom. Okay, I'll try that.
Okay. Okay, page 457, paragraph 5. And Jacqueline, I got your mute. Would you read for us paragraph 5?
God's plan for your salvation could not have been established without your will and your consent. It must have been accepted by the Son of God, for what God wills for him, he must receive. For God wills not apart from him, nor does the will of God wait upon time to be accomplished. Therefore, what joined the will of God must be in you now, being eternal. You must have set aside a place in which the Holy Spirit can abide and where he is. He must have been there since the need for him arose and was fulfilled in the same instant. Such would your reason tell you if you listened. Yet such is clearly not the ego's reasoning. Your reason's alien nature to the ego is proof you will not find the answer there. Yet, if it must be so, it must exist. And if it exists for you and has your freedom as the purpose given it, you must be free to find it.
Thank you. So we're chatting here about the absolute nature of what is giving you your creation. It must be so. It must be there because you are an extension of God. And everything that exists was not done to you, but done with you and by you, as much for you. These are all words. But you know, they start to get traction when you accept the idea that God is not a person. God is not something that dictates your life. God is the truth that powers life, not living. You are doing the living part. What do you got, Jacqueline?
A question. I was thinking about will. Just like when I think about the mind, you know, where's the mind? You know, how do I? You know, but could you say something about will? Because I'm saying, okay, it's not that clear to me. What is will?
Good, good.
You know, I was just trying to get into the more depth into it and understanding of it. So I sort of have vague, you know, an idea of it. But anything anyone would like to share on that, I would love to hear.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Perfect question. Here it is. The ego wishes and the spirit wills. Wishing can make things. Will creates things. When you will, if you know, in the parlance of this book, you're using the mind, capital M mind. You're extending creation and it's done. Your mind, when you're willing, holds only thoughts you would think with God. When you wish, you are dreaming, and wishes may or may not come true, right? A wish could happen. God, I wish this comes true. I hope, you know. That's not will. And so the Course uses this word will in distinction to the conditional ego approach to thinking. It's not creative. It's not empowered. It's wishing. That makes sense, Jacqueline?
Well, okay, so we create, we will, we decide. I mean, you know.
Yes.
Well, create and will, is that kind of the same?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, was it this group? I kind of copped out last week. You know, a shortness of time when we touch on this subject, and now maybe I should kind of pay off that. There's a paragraph I think it was even just last week when we were reading on page 457 even. But first, before we go there,
I ask this because, you know, it says God's will is my will, or my will is God's will. That's where I started really thinking about it. What is that? You know, I'd really like to have an experience, complete understanding. And, you know, when I awaken, I probably will. But at this point, I was just trying to sense it, understand it in a deeper way.
This might help. To will is a movement of mind using the power of God, which is unlimited. The only movement of God's mind that can occur is through you as what you really are. You are the Christ. You are the extension of God. There are no others in truth. And so all will comes through you. It's your function. In truth,
we really don't have our own will at all. That's an illusion, part of the illusion or something.
Say that again.
We don't have our own will at all.
You don't have a separate will.
Yeah. Okay.
That's correct.
A separate will.
What you could actually will must also be the will of God, because of the will, the quality of will is creation. It's eternal. It's all powerful and all good. In this book, when you see that word will, that's what it means. It means it's right-minded thinking, one-minded thinking even. And it's an extension and expansion of God, of what is. And that's how God is expanded. As you see in these paragraphs we're reading, this circular discussion going on here, it seems like God made you, but then actually God made you with you. That's why I say the circle is very important to understand. It takes a miracle. You have to do nonlinear thinking. I know it's all hard lifting until it isn't. Because it really is part of your spiritual awakening, is to see this circle I'm talking about. Ross, what do you got?
Well, what comes up for me, and you know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's that what you said was you go along with God's will, and to me, that's, it says, if you're not experiencing perfect joy, perfect peace, perfect happiness, you're attempting to go against God's will.
Yeah.
So as soon as you feel angry, upset, or any of these emotions, I mean, for me, I check in with myself and I go, well, I'm really trying to go against God's will, because I'm not feeling 100% joyful. I'm not feeling 100% peaceful. I'm not feeling 100% happy. That's his will. And it's also my will. So what am I doing here?
Nice, Ross.
Off.
Beautiful. Yeah.
To me, that's really the epitome of will. Why not go ahead with God's will? Because that's what he wants for you. Perfect peace, perfect happiness, perfect love, perfect communication. He gave you all that when he created you. And if you're trying to go against that, you're really jumping full on board onto the ego train.
So, and it feels like it.
Try to jump off as quick as you can and look for that, for God's will, which is that perfect joy.
Yes. Yeah. And you bet. Thank you, Ross. And that will is also your own will. That's why the Course speaks with so much authority when it describes this ego pursuit that you're doing is not what you want. You've heard that phrase in the book, right? You're doing what you don't want. That's how, because he knows your true will, the only thing you'll be satisfied with. Jacqueline?
Take my hand. Oops.
Okay.
Take my hand down.
Okay.
Sorry.
Everybody turn to, what page is that going to be? It's way back. It's chapter 3. So go head to the front of your book. First, probably 50 pages, and go to section 5. Yes, page 44. And we kind of rushed through this last week, and I wanted to pay this off a little bit. We're up to. Cecilia, are you there? Do you want to read? Oh, Cecilia.
Okay. So what do you want me to read?
I would like you to read paragraph 2 on page 44.
Okay. Hold on. Okay. Since the separation, the words create and make have become confused. When you make something, you do so out of a specific sense of lack or need. Anything made for a specific purpose has no true generalizability.
Yeah, okay, convert that to Spanish. Would you translate that to Spanish, please?
No, I can't do that. So I didn't realize I don't have my camera on. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so anything made for a specific purpose has no true generalizability. Okay. When you make something to fill a perceived lack, you are tacitly implying that you believe in separation. The ego has invented many ingenious thought systems for this purpose. none of them is creative. Inventiveness is wasted effort, even in its most ingenious form. The highly specific nature of invention is not worthy of the abstract creativity of God's creation. That's a lot.
Yes, thank you.
I have to. Maybe you can read it again.
Thank you, Cecilia. Tim, would you read that paragraph back to Cecilia? And I think you actually got us started on that conversation last week about make and create.
Sad to say, in all honesty, I don't remember being the author of that conversation. Not to say that I didn't. I talk too much, my wife says.
Okay, no problem. Paragraph 2 on page 44.
Since the separation, the words create and make have become confused. When you make something, you do so out of a specific sense of lack or need.
Okay, now hold on there. I'm going to kind of edit as we go through.
I wish something was true.
Exactly. Thank you, Tim. You got it. Exactly. This is like wish versus will. Please continue.
Okay. When you make something to fill a perceived lack, you are tacitly implying that you believe in separation. I wish it was other than the way it is. The ego has invented many ingenious thought systems for this purpose. None of them is creative. Inventiveness is wasted effort, even in its most ingenious forms. The highly specific nature of invention is not worthy of the abstract creativity of God's creation.
So Don, in his conversations with his daughter, maybe he can talk to all his friends and a couple of therapists and come up with some really creative things to say. He could invent the perfect phrase for his daughter to hear. But that would not be a creation of love. That would not be a true joining. It might work. You might crush her, man. If you had all the facts of what she was about to say, we could all get together, get a few lawyers in on it, and we could really quiet her down. We could perfect phrase.
At the total cost of a loving relationship.
At the total cost of love. Absolutely right. So there's the distinction between make and create. Make is specific. You make something, it's for a specific purpose. When you create something, and like when Don has this conversation with his daughter, it's to actually create a loving interchange, to open up and be a loving person. Not attacking, not defending, there. Sounding normal the whole time, I hope, but with his heart full and with his goal already set before the conversation of just to be loving, to show up and come into the conversation comfortable, non-defended, and to leave it comfortable, non-defended, and feeling very loving. Yeah. Set the goal. Page 365 in the text. Thanks, Deborah. Great section on working with special relationships. Very, very practical advice in about 10 or 12 paragraphs where it says, look, decide first how the conversation is going to go in all the ways that matter. The ego says you have to have the conversation and then figure out whether it went good or bad. That would not be willing, would it? That would be wishing it worked. Yeah. Good, good, good. Okay, how much time we have? Good, good, good. Okay. I think we can pull off paragraph 6 as well tonight. Go to page 457 in the text. And I think who hasn't read yet? Ross, have you read yet?
Yeah.
Okay. I think everybody's read. So, Michaeline, would you read for us paragraph 6 on page 457? I got your mute.
Okay. Paragraph 6. God's plan is simple, never circular, and never self-defeating. He has no thoughts except the self-extending, and in this your will must be included. Thus, there must be a part of you that knows his will and shares it. It is not meaningful to ask if what must be is so, but it is meaningful to ask why you are unaware of what is so. For this must have an answer if the plan of God for your salvation is complete. And it must be complete because its source knows not of incompletion.
Excellent. Thank you, Michaeline.
You're welcome.
Okay, so that is kind of a restatement of this very critical point, is that what you were made with and made by is still with you now. You're not going to be searching for this connection with God. You're simply going to allow it to be. Love is. Love is always and all the time. It's the blocks to the awareness of love's presence, these clever inventions of the ego that block it. And so, in order for you to become aware, in order for you to own something that's so unnatural to the ego, you really would have to open your mind to where your mind comes from. You'd have to open to the idea that whatever you are, it's not made by circumstances. In the world, yes, the ego, we could draw up a list of all the wonderful and horrible things that happened to you that gave you the circumstances of your life. Hey, I show you the scar I got. Let me show you how that happened. Did I tell you about my parents? Let me tell you what happened there. Sure. But you know, all of that is so material and inconsequential every time you spend a moment in meditation, isn't it? You spend a moment of clarity and all the stories drop away. At least I hope they do. I hope you get to a point of simple rest where you find yourself quite alive and quite unburdened. I hope this happens to you in your meditations, even only for an instant. Because this is when you're touching the truth about you. We call it the holy instant for that very good reason. But this is a door you can walk through to recognize your true being, your untroubled true being. And where could that possibly come? Where could your mind and the ability for you to think at all possibly come? But from what is? And we'd have to put a capital letter on it. This is reasonable. What's unreasonable is that you are a victim to your family and your world and the color of your skin and the size of your bank account and whether or not your spouse did the right thing at the right time and your parents too. That's very unreasonable. It's a good story. But if you've ever touched the present moment in a meditation and discovered how you are alive outside of what has your name, it happens in the holy instant, then you know it's unreasonable that you came from this world. You must, at some point, seek for this. You know, there's a lesson that starts out. I think it's lesson 155. Do we have time to read that? Yeah, we do. It's really beautiful. The next paragraph also discusses this. But let's go to workbook. You got to see where it says this right in black and white in your own book.
Page 291.
Oh, right. You're hired. What she said. Page 291. look at look at paragraph one. And Deborah, would you start reading that for us?
There is a way of living in the world that is not here, although it seems to be. You do not change appearance, though you smile more frequently. Your forehead is serene. Your eyes are quiet. And the ones who walk the world as you do recognize their own. Yet those who have not yet perceived the way will recognize you also and believe that you are like them as you were before. Yeah.
This is a perspective. You'd still be normal around the people in the world that see you as normal. They see you as a regular egomaniac like themselves. But for the people who are awakening, they will see you also. They will recognize in your eyes and in your certainty your appeal to the truth. But the people who are egomaniacs will see you like an egomaniac. Yeah. Oh, there's another lesson.
And then for me, it's like the labels that people put on themselves. My fibromyalgia. I own it. That's my identity. I have this condition and, you know, it's limiting me and I'm wrapped up in it. Or, you know, whatever it is, their career. Is
identifying with it, right?
It's like, oh, okay, if that's what you want to be, okay. You can slap any label on yourself you want.
Yes. Yes. Very world.
Us to give up the my's. My child, my car, my house, my daughter, my...
Such a habit, huh?
And psychologists do it the worst. He's an egomaniac. He's a psychopath. He's a this or she's a
labels.
That. Yeah. Psychologists are just awful. Yeah. Instead of saying they have.
It is 182. Okay, go to page 339 real quick. In the workbook, yeah. 339. It's less than 182. This one gets it also, even more direct. Sundari, would you read for us paragraph one? And that will be enough.
Lesson 182. I will be still an instant and go home. This world you seem to live in is not home to you. And somewhere in your mind, you know that this is true. A memory of home keeps haunting you, as if there were a place that called you to return, although you do not recognize the voice, nor what it is the voice reminds you of. Yet still you feel an alien here, from somewhere all unknown. Nothing so definite that you could say with certainty you are in exile here. Just a persistent feeling, sometimes not more than a tiny throb, at other times hardly remembered, actively dismissed, but surely to return to mind again.
You see this appeal that this is not your home? It's written right in this book. He every once in a while, Jesus rises up to a little more than what A Course in Miracles' main teaching is. And then he goes right back into, well, you got to take responsibility for your stinking thinking. But every once in a while, he can't help himself. And it's another level of teaching that is throughout the book.
It feels so deep, that paragraph, to me, Andrew, just that. Do I deserve to be here? Am I really allowed to occupy this space as me? And I mean, it's actually a really outrageous feeling at a very, very deep level, and very scary to grant myself the cosmic permission to be here as who and what I am. I think there's nothing harder on some level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You bet. And in the hands of the ego, it's guilt-provoking. In the hands of the Holy Spirit, it's an absolute celebration. All right. You know what we're going to do? We have to end the meeting now, but next week we're going to start with this paragraph to get us back in the same discussion, and then we'll go on with the section in the text we were working, because it's really winding us up to a nice high discussion.
Do you know, Andrew, that was what was so cool about the baby, too.
Yeah.
Baby could just occupy the space it occupied and just be there. it's sort of incredible to see something not afraid to just occupy the space it's in.
It doesn't even know how to be afraid.
Exactly.
It doesn't even know what fear means. Oh, so true. Okay, everybody. Thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me.
Thank you, Andrew.
Nice, nice. Good to see you, Michaeleen. Thank you, Don. Have a great time with your daughter. Let that relationship be reborn in holiness. Only you can do this. No, nobody else could, not even the Holy Spirit or Jesus could possibly do what you have the power to do and the love that you have power to bring. So, boy, that's going to be a good opportunity.
I feel like I came home tonight, Andrew. Thank you.
Yay! So glad I reached out. Good, good, Michaeleen. So good to see you. Wish I could hug you.
I know.
Good, good, good.
Welcome. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Good job. Everybody pitched in nicely.